Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this here man, gentleman, is Marek Larwood.
What you didn't see there was that it's always the things you don't... You just hear our voices, but you don't see the physical actions.
Yeah.
And you just said, well, this... You gestured as if I was some sort of monster. How you would say,
I think you're projecting.
This is the monster in the cupboard, and you just...
To me, it was like doing the weather, and it was like a warm front is over here.
Oh, it's lovely. We're going to talk about films.
We are.
I always feel this bit, I worry that this is people listening for the first time are judging what it's going to be like, this conversation.
Yeah, it's true, you do. But you do mention that quite often. So this bit has actually become you worrying about this bit.
I don't give a shit anymore.
That's films. The format point.
Films.
Well, I mentioned briefly last week, and I thought we should probably talk about it as... It's become a bit of a phenomena, and that is Frozen.
Yeah, I read an article in The Guardian about a week and a half ago. It's mainly from kids that become obsessed with Frozen.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, lots of adults are having to watch it over a million times because their children are watching it constantly because it's got really caught on. I haven't seen this film yet. Tell me, why is it so special?
Well... It is an above-average Disney film. I was a big fan of Tangled, which came before, and they're now doing the adjective films.
Tangled is Rapunzel, right?
Tangled is Rapunzel. This is very loosely the Snow Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they've been trying to adapt the Snow Queen at Disney since the 40s, and they finally managed to do it. It's a musical. Like Tangled is, the songs are better than Tangled. Tangles were very sort of pop 101. These are still pop 101, but there's a couple of corkers in there, basically, that people love. There have been loads of recreations of the big show-stopping number on the internet by everyone doing it. But adults have really got behind it as well. It's not just the kids, which is interesting. Really well-told story first, and good characters. Enough said about that is the reason people like it. It's a good story, and it's not just the cliched screenplay either. There is actually a surprising twist, I think.
Someone said in this article I read, I mean, you might as well go and read this article rather than listen to me. It was in The Guardian.
No, tell me what vague things you remember about something you read.
The vague things I remember about something I read. This is hearsay. This is when you study history. This is how valid is the information? Is it from the first source?
Yeah.
Or the third or the second source? I say this information is about as valid. So it's like the eighth source. It's like someone's drawn a treasure map.
It's the HP source, mate.
HP source. Someone's drawn a treasure map, dropped it in a toilet. Someone's gone to the toilet on that, flushed it. They found it. A dog's eaten it, and then it's come out the other end. Someone's read that. Told their mate with a speech impediment, who then told another friend.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of the purity of me recounting the Guardian story.
This is going to be good.
So some bloke bang on about how the main song's got over 230 million hits on YouTube, and although there isn't a big villain in it, which normal successful kids films always have.
Yeah, it's interesting that
he said that the villain isn't necessarily the people, but it's the emotions and the feelings of the characters.
They get, but it's.
But it was said much better.
That makes it sound like it's sort of atypical storytelling, and it isn't. It's absolutely
pedestrian.
It's not. It's not. It is Route One Disney, but they've just upgraded it, the formula a bit. What is interesting is it's twin female protagonists who aren't just useless princesses. They are princesses. They've not deviated that far from the Disney norm, but they're not the objects, you know, that
of desire.
Of the desire they usually are. They are. It's all about the girls, basically.
What are their names?
Their names are Prince
Elmer.
Anna. Almost. I remember Princess Anna because I think that's the name of the princess in A Bug's Life as well. But
there's one naive one and one more sassy one, right?
No, not quite so much. There's one who, because of her curse, is really emotionally closed.
What's the
frozen heart? Is
halitosis.
No, she has the power to manipulate ice and snow, but she doesn't see it as good because she thinks people will think she's different. So she tries to hide it her whole life.
I bet
life.
She sings a song about that, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. And there's her sister.
Oh, Sheery me.
Who doesn't know about it.
Coming out my fingers. Does it go like that?
That's the one, yeah. Coming out my fingers.
She'd be great for food, wouldn't she? Especially in those. If it was the age before freezers, she'd be perfect.
Well, the main male character is a man whose job it is to get ice from the mountains and bring it down. He's out of a job now.
But then he can set up a food factory with her.
Well, maybe, but I mean, it's serious economic problems going on in the frozen world. It's properly good. The story's really well told. It's like watching an animated version of a stage musical that has pre-existed. It's that tight in terms of the musical beats, and it's perfect until the halfway point. And then there isn't another song.
What the hell?
Yeah, he just abandons the musical form and carries on the story, just doing the story, like a normal Disney film without music. It's really weird that the songs become further and further apart until there just really aren't any.
I wonder if someone got sacked, if the music writer got sacked halfway through.
I don't know. It works, though, weirdly, because if they was, you know, it's just the stuff that you can't really do. I don't know. Maybe if it had songs, I'd think differently, but it's enjoyable as far as kids' films go. I've been doing a bit of reading about this, and it's actually quite interesting because Frozen's made by Walt Disney Animation Studios, who have done hundreds of bloody films, but they were around the time they did Oliver and Company and Basil the Great Mouse Detective and all of these films that sort of have a place in people's hearts, but they feel a bit TV movie-ish, you know, not that ambitious. They were actually going to close down the animation studio as part of Disney, and they were given an ultimatum that said if your next film isn't a big success, Walt Disney will no longer make animations for the cinema.
And he will kill your family.
No, he was already dead, but Walt Disney, the company, I think. And the next film they made was The Little Mermaid. They went all out and just went, right, we're going to do proper musicals rather than just write some silly songs.
That was a big success.
Massive success. And then they did Beauty and the Beast, even more so. And that, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew. And then they started to decline, I think, in quality as well as in popularity when Pixar was on the ascendancy.
Toy Story, isn't it?
From Toy Story onwards.
Toy Story, isn't it, yeah?
And now that they're starting to make really good films again, I think it coincides with Pixar making more and more mediocre films and doing a lot of sequels and sort of bottling it a bit.
Pixar becomes Disney, they become the big people that no one likes.
Exactly, it's sort of started, it's a bit of an ebb and flow between the two.
Cyclical.
Yeah.
In economics. Yeah?
Yeah, I know exactly what you
mean.
And
you're trying to talk while you're choking in your coffee.
It's just like in economics, isn't it?
Yeah. Or also, in terms like the year as well,
yeah,
the weather.
That's cyclical. Or it's a bit like a wagon wheel, isn't it?
I just want to say things that go around in circles.
Yeah, history repeating.
Of course, yeah. I wonder how much we repeat ourselves on these podcasts.
Apparently our vocabulary on this podcast is only 20 words, and it's because the order we put them in.
Someone did a study on rappers' vocabulary,
yeah,
to see how much they use, and I have no idea what the results are.
It's like history, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like economics.
A lot of, every podcast, they'll start talking about something, and I have no idea what the conclusion is, but, you know, you can go and find it out yourselves. That's the internet for you.
Google it.
You don't need to know anything.
Google it. But Frozen, I was pleasantly surprised with. I thought they had good comedy characters and some good songs and a genuinely really well-written and told story.
What comedy Disney character would you like to play?
Ooh. Stitch.
From Lilo and Stitch.
Lilo. It's spelt Lilo, but it's Lilo.
Sorry, mate.
It's all right. Stitch. I'm a fan of Stitch. How about you?
Maybe...
I'd see... maybe your Iago, the parrot.
Which one's he?
In Aladdin.
I haven't seen... Is he an arsehole, like in Othello's Iago? Basically,
he's a bit of an arsehole, yeah.
He tries to be friends with I'm thinking of Iago and Othello, who tries to be friends with Othello, but eventually he's killing him.
No, he's just the henchman to the bad guy.
I quite like 101 Dalmatians. I wouldn't mind being something in that.
Oh, in the live action one, it was Hugh Laurie and Mark Williams, of course, were the henchmen in that.
Yeah,
one.
I don't think Mark Williams was very good. I could have been a better henchman.
You think?
Yeah.
Who would you get to play the antithesis of your physicality so you look like a matched pair?
Oh, it'd probably be my one-time comedy partner, Greg Davis.
Oh.
Although, they'd probably go, oh, Greg's too big for that, you need someone bigger.
So who is the A-list
I'll
you?
I'd probably be replaced by someone,
Matt Lucas.
Toby Jones.
Hey, you being the C-list Toby Jones, I'd take that if I were you. That's good. That's pedigree.
I'm sure there's another Disney... Anyway, we're not here to fantasise about what Disney characters
aren't
we play.
Aren't we?
I'm sure someone's going to send in. Why don't you send pictures of who you think best epitomises us and we'll post them on our Facebook page.
All right. Cartoons, yeah?
Which Disney cartoons do you think of when you hear our voices on the airwaves?
All right. Let's see if anyone replies.
Are you going to give Frozen a mark, David's mark?
I'm getting bored of actually reviewing things.
Oh, don't bother, mate.
Oh, I give it 12 snowflakes.
We've got a whole load of letters.
Oh.
Marek's
bag is bulging.
Yes. And I'm about to spill it all over your ears. One of our regular listeners, Francesca Scalici, has written in. Would you like to read this?
Yeah, go on.
Here is letter number one.
Boop. Who am I to ignore the cry for help letters of my favourite film guys? First, I thought you might like to know that my comrade in letter writing, Chris Webb, and I have become Facebook friends.
Chris Webb is a regular listener who also listens to other sites. And if you ask me, he's got a bit cocky about it. Carry on.
We shared a number of lengthy pen pal style messages, but alas, I have dropped the ball on keeping in touch.
Good.
But, through the magic of Facebook and its stalker enabling qualities, I can tell you that Chris and his wife are expecting a baby. To which I say, yay them, and also congratulations.
Fandango Web.
And you guys should too. Congratulations
Chris Webb, on your baby,
and
Fandango
Webb. This is Christopher Webb.
Yes.
And Christopher Webb Jr.
Come on, this needs to be about films.
In other news, I recommended the film Short Term 12 on the Facebook page and was summarily ignored. So I am reiterating it. You and so many others. I heartily recommend it. I think it even manages to achieve that which you two were discussing in last week's episode, fleshing out secondary characters while keeping the length manageable. And also, just because it was brought up on another podcast, I was reminded how good a film it was. I recommend Bernie. Also, Mud was a really good one. So, there. Three rentable recommendations. So, that was Short Term 12, Bernie, and Mud. Lastly, a question for Marek. Is there any superhero film you genuinely like? I'm with you that I've been finding the whole genre tedious these days. The closest I got to really loving a superhero flick was Captain America, but of course, it ultimately devolved into a 30-minute fight scene, and I just can't be asked. I fell asleep in the theatre. You make my Friday cookie icing bearable, and for that I thank you, Francesca. So, Marek, is there an actual superhero film you can bear?
The first film I ever saw at the cinema was Condor Man, which I thought was brilliant, and I watched it again recently. It's terrible. I don't like superhero.
What about the Christopher Reeve Superman films?
Yeah, Superman 2 I quite like.
Yeah?
Superman 2's good, and the Batman... The second of the trilogy.
Dark Knight.
Yes.
You like that one?
Was really good. I didn't like Batman Begins.
I prefer Batman Begins, I think. And I also like Bane in Dark Knight Rises. I like that one. He's the best thing ever. I like all of them, don't I? I think I'm a big fan of the X-Men before the films came out. I was a big fan of the X-Men before the films came out, and I think that's probably fed into the whole thing. Because I've sort of got that, oh, what's his power, and what's this one? Oh, that would be good.
I like the first half of the Avengers. That was good as well.
Yeah.
I've got another letter here. Let's go for it. Dear Derry Merrick and Buddy, Phil Shakespeare here, recent co-winner of your Film Fandango, but at the Oscar competition.
Film Shakespeare?
Yeah,
Phil Shakespeare.
You should read
the rest like Shakespeare.
Well, he's already requested a thing.
Oh, okay. What is it?
I live in South London these days, but grew up in Teesside. I won't really have much of an identifiable accent. I'm just a bit generic, slightly posh, I suppose. But knock yourself out and go full on Geordie if you fancy it. Peter Grove. I've had an email read out by you guys once before in the early days, but Danielle mocked me from finding the water babies traumatic as a child. Thought I'd risk further ridicule. This is terrible, I apologise. There's been some discussion recently as to what defines something being sci-fi. Gravity has been trumpeted as the first science fiction picture to win big at the Oscars, but there have been dissenting voices saying it doesn't count as sci-fi, supposedly because the establishment doesn't approve the genre and would prefer the Oscars roster to remain sci-fi free. Is that Geordie? It's not really, is it?
It's close.
If I say
bite a groove.
That's my way in. You have a word to get it into.
Bite a groove.
I'm not all anti-sci-fi, far from it. But to my mind, science fiction involves fictitious science. So obviously futuristic spacey fare, such as Star Trek, is sci-fi because it warps speed drives, lithium crystals and other futuristic reality-bending technologies are involved. But also something set up contemporaneously, such as The Fly, qualifies without involving space or aliens, owing to the transporter pod machine that ends up turning Jeff Goldblum into a fly. He's put a spoiler alert there kindly, but I didn't want to see it.
I think we know he turns into a fly.
Conversely, something being set in space does not in and of itself automatically mean that it's sci-fi. Apollo 13 is not sci-fi. It is not a fiction, of course. So perhaps that's the best examples. But Gravity, despite being fictional and set in space, all revolves around contemporary technology. So I really don't think it's science fiction. What do you gentlemen think? Love the show. Best wishes, Phil.
I think Phil's right. I think, obviously, the genre... The fantasy genres are a bit too broad in terms of what they encapsulate. Sci-fi is often far too broad a term, and really, in my mind, science fiction is when you create a what-if scenario for a specific kind of technology that does not yet exist, and then look at the human repercussions of it. I would argue that Star Wars, for instance, is not sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is space opera. And actually, Star Wars has more in common with Lord of the Rings than it does with, say, Silent Running or The Fly.
I think he has put it perfectly in this email. I know, really badly.
I think Gravity isn't a sci-fi. I'd put it with... It's a drama set in space. I don't think it's sci-fi. That's what he's saying.
He's saying, to my mind, science fiction involves fictitious science. I think that's a really good defining thing for it.
But no, but I would agree with him, but then go so far as to say not all things that contain fictitious science are sci-fi.
Yeah.
It has to be about the fictitious science.
I don't know. I've got some odd barometer in my brain that decides something sci-fi. I agree, Gravity is on the borders of sci-fi, because I think there's bits in it, I don't want to say spoilers, which are a bit fictitious and a bit, you know, some moments but in it.
All superhero films are not sci-fi, they are superhero films.
Yeah.
And yet they contain fictitious
I can't understand how I know what sci-fi, but it's, if you gave me a list, I'd say that's sci-fi, that isn't sci-fi.
Mm. Oh, it's playing with the conventions of society and with humanity, basically, and it's exploring that. Whereas space opera is exactly what that describes, which is knights and wizards and old operatic traditions, you know, basically European folklore set in space. So you have massive wars and emperors and all of this. That's space opera.
I think in terms of, you have to start categorising things in a certain way. I think it's a detriment of some films, because I think things get pigeonholed as sci-fi, and that affects, a lot of people don't see them. Like if I said to my mum, do you want to see this sci-fi film? She would never see that. She would never watch a film.
Absolutely, yes, it turns a lot of people off.
For example, Moon is one of my favourite films ever. I recently got a soundtrack.
That's sci-fi. Moon, great.
That's sci-fi, but it's something you say, by saying it's sci-fi, I don't think it would. Some people, it's like saying, there's a real stigma about comic book readers.
Yes.
People reading comic books, I like reading graphic novels. People think you're a weirdo, even though the
art form is so
broad now.
Yeah.
It's crazy that you could even say people from all. It's really great. You've got like psychology books in graphic novels. You've got but by Isabella,
philosophy books.
Isabella Greenberg. I read by her called the Encyclopedia of the Earth, which isn't even about. It's sort of a folklore book. Mm.
But comparing like Dennis the Menace with Mouse, you can't.
The
I mean,
thing
that's not one genre.
Same thing
surely.
As sci-fi, yeah.
It's one medium in comic books, but you don't get to say that with films. I mean, for instance, Blade Runner. I'd say absolutely 100% sci-fi, because it asks, what if you could have artificial intelligence, and therefore do we treat it like it's a human? And it plays that out as a story of, is it okay to kill these guys? And what if they want more life than what you've handed them? That is a sci-fi. Whereas for me, Star Trek, it's got a lot of fictional science in it, but the TV show is often far more sci-fi than the films are.
That's odd. Sci-fi, the word puts me off.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of my favourite films are sci-fi. Like Blade Runner, for example, I think is one of the greatest films ever.
It's fantastic.
I always think about my mum. She wouldn't ever watch anything sci-fi, and she's missing out on all these. Blade Runner's not about that; it's about, you know, identity, almost really, and what is about humanity, I suppose.
Yes.
For me, and that's the main message for it.
And then fantasy is when stuff there are supernatural things that are not explained with a fictitious science. It's just magic, basically, that all-encompassing magic thing. So a lot of it is elves and dwarves and barbarians and rubbish like that. You know, it's a very.
One of my best friends are barbarians.
I'm terribly sorry. But then things like Highlander, I would class under fantasy rather than sci-fi, because it's not explained. The joy of it is the fact it's not explained until the sequel, which is terrible. But where they turn out to be aliens. But in the first one, that's fantasy because there's no scientific idea that's put forward.
The ideal time to watch Highlander is when you're about 13. I watched it when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
It's the most incredible film I've ever seen.
It rules your life when you're that age.
Yeah.
It's amazing. RoboCop the same, I'd say. Yeah. Sci-fi. RoboCop sci-fi, because again, it's
well,
playing with
I
the
think
fringes
you've
of what's
opened up a can of worms there, but I think it's a very interesting question, and I think for homework, all listeners can go and try and send in their own definition of sci-fi, and if they want to do that, how do they do that, David?
Well, you can email us if you'd like it read out in a silly voice, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or you can start a thread to argue with each other on Facebook, /filmfandango. Or you can tweet us if you like, @filmfandango, @MrDavidReed, or @MarekLarwood. Or @StephenFry if you really want to get him involved.
He won't give a shit.
He likes science.
And also, we will say thank you to people who donate to help helping this podcast. We would do it for free. And if you enjoy listening, just donate like 50p or something to pay for the Libsyn thing so we can keep all the podcasts online and cover the cost of it. Do I explain that properly?
No, never. Thank you to everyone who's donated already. And if you'd like to donate, then you can go to filmfandango.co.uk. And follow the link from there.
It really helps us out, and just cover covers the cost of everything, whatever.
Speaking of Facebook,
you put
on Facebook a couple of weeks ago that you were going to look at films for free.
Yeah, but I've got a couple more letters first.
Oh, have you?
Really, to quickly run through.
We have had a lot of letters in the last 2 weeks.
Here's one, because you talked about Spider-Man quite a while ago. Do you want to read this one out?
Okay, what voice?
Just do normal.
Hello to you two men and dog. I'm writing in today to address your comments on the most recent Spider-Man film. As a comic book fan, since childhood I thought The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was far superior to the last film released, rebooting the franchise. But must pick you up on some of your spider facts. Oh, good. First off, Peter Parker has aged throughout the comic book run and has been married / divorced, been a teacher, a pro photographer and a scientist, and not the eternal teenager suggested. Sure. Also, the portrayal of the character Peter Parker in Amazing Spider-Man 2 is accurate to the comics, as he is always full of self-doubt and guilt, while still being the quippy webhead in his role as Spider-Man. Not meaning to be a fanboy, but thought this best addressed in a comic book store guy type email. Worst research ever. Keep watching the film, specifically Session 9. Okay? Thanks, Paul T, a.k.a. Pablo. It's interesting, this, that you can have a character who's wrapped by guilt and then quipping when it's in comic books. There's something about dialogue that your brain always, when it's just written down, your brain always finds a way that it works.
Mm.
Whereas when you have to say this stuff out loud, suddenly you look like an asshole. I think it's often the problem with comic book adaptations, and that you can write this stuff, you can't say it. And the best ones are when the writer or the director has managed to make it all work. Like, Sin City, I think, manages it very well to create a world in which that kind of heightened, ridiculous dialogue can seem real. Whereas others, where they bring it back more back down to earth, it just becomes ludicrous, like Darkman, for instance, where it just becomes preposterous, and I'm sure it would have worked on the page.
I find that a lot of things I say out loud, if you take those and put those into a comic book, they'd be genius.
Mm. Yeah, but here in real life, they're just sort terrible. Of garbled ramblings.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible, David. I don't mind saying. It's terrible. I've got one more letter quickly to read out.
Okay.
It's in a Scottish accent, but I can't do it, but I haven't got much time, so we're going to do it quickly.
Of course.
Dear Merrick, David and Buddy, I'm from Scotland, so I appreciate if it's read out in the most offensive Scottish accent you can do. Well, it has to be English, doesn't it?
That is. as they call it, educated Scots.
Yeah. I've listened to all episodes and enjoyed ramblings immensely. I just finished the latest episode, 130, just a couple of weeks ago. And sympathise with Merrick for the lack of good films out in the last week. I've been becoming more and more bored with all the superhero smashy, good, jumpy, punchy films full of CGI over the last few years. Admittedly, I do have a Cineworld card, so I go as often as I can to get my money's worth. Have you seen Lock yet? It's about 90 minutes of a gripping story. Tom Hardy was superb, and the film plays out simply through phone calls he makes to colleagues and family. It would be great for the wide release, because I thought it was emotional, funny, heartbreaking and dramatic, and focused on Tom Hardy driving. And that is it. I'm amazed this story kept me as interested as it did, especially as Michael Bay type films can have action sequences and explosions, and they sometimes bore me with their lack of imagination, depth or character development. Lock may be my film of the year, a bit like last year's Mud with Matthew McConaughey, which I loved. I saw it in the middle of a whole bunch of comic book films, so it was refreshing to see a film that could potentially have been set in any time period with no technology. Keep up the good work and hope you both come to Edinburgh this year with shows. Dodsey from Scotland. I'm not going to Edinburgh.
Neither am I. Bad luck, Dodsey.
Unlucky, Dodsey. Shall we move into the next section then?
Well, Locke, I will try and track down. I've not seen it, but I want to because I really like Tom Hardy. It does sound interesting. It sounds like a sort of cinema version of Marion and Jeff. Next section.
Well, I thought this as cinema is really expensive and everyone's really poor at the moment. Why not try and find out what films you can watch for free?
Mm-hmm.
And on YouTube. Now, I don't know if these are legal or not. I'm not supporting watching films.
Tricky. Things are often taken down rather quickly, aren't they?
These
days.
On our Facebook page, Darren, I put a request a couple of weeks ago asking for any free films. And there's a link on there, which I'm just finding it now. Excuse me, I should have done this. Darren Pruer put on there, which is Reddit Full Movies YouTube. So someone's sort of done this list. Reddit's like an American site. And there's lists on there. I've tried to pick out the ones that I don't know, when I'm watching a film, it has to be at least 720. When I watch stuff back, do you change the... On YouTube, yeah, when you watch films... Yeah, yeah,
if they're 360, is it 360,
I think it really affects... Yeah, I think 360 films maybe does spoil watching the film.
Yeah. I think we're talking about the resolution.
Yeah, so when you go and watch stuff on YouTube, you probably know this, you change the resolution. I think 720 SD...
That's decent.
1080 is HD, but either of those. So you can even select... you can, on this Reddit site, the year... Not the year, the 80s, 90s, whatever. You can say it's got to be at least 720 or 1080, so you know when you want something that's good quality. There's lots of great films in there. We've looked The Gods Must Be Crazy, which we reviewed.
It's great.
That's on YouTube, it's only 360.
Dark Crystal's up there.
The Dark Crystal, The Illusionist.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I prefer The Prestige, but...
This 360 one, which is Ransom, the Mel Gibson thing.
Ransom's all right, isn't it? Gary Sinise as the bad man.
It's just before Mel Gibson went mental, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's
pre-mental Gibson.
Mental prolapse Gibson.
Or pre-Beaver.
Pre-Beaver.
Did you watch The Beaver?
No. No, I had no interest.
Originally, that was about a box of shit. Do you know that?
No.
I think the story is about a guy who carried a box of shit around.
No.
Please correct me,
that
someone.
He made talk?
Yeah, something like that. Or maybe that's...
Was Jodie Foster attached to this?
Yeah, maybe it's a dream of mine. I don't know. Kingpin's on there, but only 360.
Yeah.
Now there are...
And the Beastmaster's on there.
Your favourite film, The Beastmaster.
Yes. I bloody love animals and really wanted them to understand me when I was little. I think that probably fed into it.
Other one... I'll put this on the Facebook page and hopefully you can add to ones you find on there. Primer, which we reviewed, which is a Shane Carruth film about time travel.
Yeah.
We reviewed it about 4 or 5 months ago. It is fascinating and crazy.
You know, I thought it was slightly boring, but it has stayed with me. Like, I can remember nearly all the film. Like, it's an excellent piece of filmmaking.
And I was trying to find a new film I hadn't watched before. I started watching Night of the Living Dead, which I have seen. I forgot how good that is.
Mm.
The first George Romero zombie film.
Yes.
Black and white one. The start is great. I just watched the first 20 minutes and it's...
I will catch that. It's been so long since I saw all of those.
It looks really great on YouTube. You can't make a bad zombie film.
So, I can't see how this is legal.
It probably is illegal, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's up to you as consumers to do what you will. I don't like watching illegal films if I can. But it's... There are legitimate films on YouTube that as well, and some of these may well be them. I don't know where the people who own the copyright have put them up there because it's just not worth their investment in distribution
anymore.
I think
Night of the Living Dead, maybe that's somewhat old. That's like 40 years old now, is it? More than that? In the 70s?
Well, and then there's films like we watched Wake in Fright. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That is up there legally because they don't want to distribute it anymore.
Well, I picked one film I hadn't seen before.
What was that?
And it's quite remarkable. It was my first Dario Argento film I've seen.
Yes.
Suspiria.
Not seen it.
It, and you have to watch this in high resolution, because there are some things I've seen in this film. It's nice to watch a film, you think, I've never seen anything like this before.
Mm.
It's incredible. Some of the visually and musically, it's like nothing, it's crazy. It's a story is, it's an American ballet student comes to Germany to a dance academy to study dance. It's dance academy, and the dance academy isn't all it's cracked up to be. This film was released, it's an Italian horror film, it came out in 1977. It's quite weird because I was speaking to a comedian about this today, and he said all the actors spoke in their native voices. So you've got Italian people, German people, and they've dubbed their bits over in the YouTube thing because it looks a bit odd in some bits in America. I was trying to work out why is it some people look dubbed and some people don't. But it doesn't really matter because the film is so crazy.
It's surrealist crazy, or...
Yeah, sort of. It's just visually incredible. So in this dance academy, and it's all this huge red building with these odd lights. The building is incredible, and the way he shoots it, and the way he moves the camera, it's scary. It's in the way that 70s films have that
creep.
Look of realism and creepiness that the clinical modern day camera hasn't really managed to capture.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And the lead actress in this is Jessica Harper. She's got a brilliant cherubic face. And she's sort of the voice of reason why all these weird things are going on and some of these other ballerinas die in really horrific ways. But you don't know, my favourite films, I don't know, sorry to swear, what the fuck's going to happen in this film. I don't know what's going on, but it looks so stunning. You can see how it's influenced. We talked about, was it The Fall? What was that weird film? How that was a film that was visually stunning but quite low on plot. This is, it just looks like a whole wall of colour. And it's refreshing and it feels modern. What's odd about the Suspiria is some moments feel so modern and relevant and ahead of its time, even ahead of exciting filmmaking now.
Yeah.
And at the same time, some the bits that don't work have dated so badly. So you've got a juxtaposition of two things which seem really fresh.
Yeah.
With something that seems so old, it's almost comical. And the music, I don't know if it's the YouTube recording, but it was so loud and so overpowering and odd and disturbing, that weird sort of makes you feel uncomfortable, sort of jarring but modern crazy music that really gets you. The visuals and the sound are really disconcerting and really put you out of your stride. So you feel creeped out.
I love the idea of a colourful, creepy film. People don't usually bother. But then The Shining is actually quite colourful in places. You know, they've got the incredibly colourful carpet and the, you know, visuals. It's certainly not a reduced colour palette like everything post-Seven has become. You know, it's not the tobacco-stained, grey and murky and shadowy thing that all horror films now are.
This is the most colourful thing in it. And even the blood in this is the sort of 70s... blood that doesn't look right. Mm. It doesn't matter, it's still scary because it's so bright red, and that red colour sort of is a theme throughout the film. I'm just reading, they made it with anamorphic lenses, so it's a way of which help it sort of emphasise all the colours. I thought it was absolutely fascinating and it freaked me out, and it's really rare to be freaked out by a film.
Yeah
And there's a bit, you know, in Westworld when Yul Brynner's walking around. Westworld's a sci-fi film where they go into a sci-fi world, another great film, and Yul Brynner's a bad guy, a robot that goes wrong.
Yeah, he's a robot cowboy who goes wrong in this sort of robot theme park.
And what's scary is they play, I don't know what instrument they play when he's walking, like boom, boom, a weird sound when he's walking along.
Yeah.
That makes it scary. They've got similar sound in this thing. The music's incredible. I'm reading here, the Italian prog rock band, I'm reading something on Wikipedia, Goblin composed the most musical score with Argento himself. The music's incredible.
I want to see this now. I know it's a very celebrated film, you know, I've heard of it.
I think Rotten Tomatoes given it 95%.
Blimey.
Which is really high. On IMDb, it's only got 7.3. I think if I...
IMDb's all user reviews, though, isn't it? Whereas Rotten Tomatoes is critics.
Yeah, I can see why critics would love it. It's got a huge... flaws in it, but it's a different film. Watch it on high resolution, definitely on YouTube. There's one at 720. Go to Reddit. I'm sure this came out of 77, so what's that? 47 years ago. 40, is that right?
48?
37. No, it's 37 years ago.
37.
It's incredible this stuff that came out. It looks amazing and. If the end, it all ends too quickly, but it's just, I think because there's something where all the, it's a ballet school, so all the lead characters are women. Mm. I think a lot of horror films, like, you know, like Halloween and things like that.
It's maybe a horror staple, is that, because women, I guess, are more vulnerable in society, so therefore...
I suppose, was the
first lead of a horror is often a woman.
Was Psycho the first film to do that?
Or? Interesting. Well, Psycho kills its lead about, you know...
Yeah.
Half an hour in, or hour in,
because it's a school of women. You feel more vulnerable for them.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed it as a breath of fresh air, and I think that's why Rotten Tomatoes given it such a high percentage, because it's so refreshing for the critics. And I think I'm not seeing any other Dario Argento films, and you could see how they could easily go wrong. Because the bits that are bad are bad. Yeah. But some of the ideas are so outlandish.
But the most interesting directors do have that
yeah.
as part of them, don't
He's not really... He just seemed to fit that age of the late 70s. And I've looked at some reviews of his other films, which aren't...
What are his other films? Remind me.
I'm just going to look them up now. It's the first one I've watched. I just heard so much about him. But I do recommend, if you're bored, go and look at Suspiria. He's done a lot of things like Demon and stuff like that. Phenomena, Tenebra, I don't know. Look him up on Wikipedia.
Once Upon a Time in the West is him.
I think he worked on that, I think. I don't know if he directed that.
Okay.
I think he's a writer as well for a lot of things.
I see.
But be fascinating to see. Either you love it or you hate it. It's not... it's so weird, the plot. You don't know what's going to happen with the plot, and if it is a plot, and it turns out there is, and some moments you think there isn't, you don't know it's what's going on. It really puts you a bit out off kilter, which is something good in my eyes.
Oh, his last film in 2012 was Dracula 3D, starring his daughter.
Oh God,
23 on Metacritic.
Well, there we go. That's what happened. He's ruined.
He's ruined his life.
Yeah.
I think it's his daughter, Asia Argento. I'm guessing. No, really interesting. I'll track that down.
So if you know you can get legitimate free films, I know there's a good pop website I've mentioned before called Short Film Sunday, and they pick out a free short film you can watch every Sunday. There's some really good ones on there.
Repost them on the Facebook page, because yeah, things tend to get lost.
I'll do that. But if you know any good free films or that people want to watch, it's always nice, and then not to have to pay 15 quid, whatever it is.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's it for this week.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been such fun. I really hope everyone has a nice week.
Yeah, so do I. I genuinely do.
Hey.
Hmm.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.